You know the scene, right?
Oh, I think I know exactly where you're going with this.
Yeah, you're watching a medical drama on TV, right?
Yeah.
The camera pans across this tense hospital room, and there is always that one machine in the background.
Yes, glowing in the dark.
Exactly. It's glowing. It has those squiggly green lines bouncing across a black screen, and it's making that steady, rhythmic beeping sound.
Right. And then comes the dramatic shift.
Right before the commercial break, the beep turns into this solid, high-pitched tone. The flat line?
Yeah.
Chaos ensues, doctors rush in, and you are just, you know, gripping the edge of your couch.
It has basically become the universal Hollywood shorthand for impending doom. I mean, we have all been conditioned to feel our own heart rate spike the second we hear that specific tone.
We absolutely have. But whether we are watching a show or sitting in an actual doctor's office with a cuff squeezing our arm, we kind of tend to treat these machines as just
background noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Background noise. But today, we are putting that background noise center stage.
Which is long overdue, honestly.
Completely. We are pulling from an incredible resource today, actually. It was recently updated in May 2026 by Bulmamed, and it's titled Vital Signs Monitors, The Complete Guide.
It's a remarkably thorough piece of work.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to basically trace the evolution of these devices, you know, from basic manual tools into these high-tech, AI-driven, life-saving hubs.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, we are going to explore what this invisible web of technology means for the future of your own healthcare.
Because, I mean, that screen with the squiggly lines, it is doing incredibly complex work. It's continuously translating the invisible physiological language of the human body into, well, actionable, predictive data.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we can get into artificial intelligence and predictive medicine, we have to look at what these machines are actually measuring, right?
Yeah.
And how we even arrived at this point.
Yeah, we definitely need the history first.
Right, because we certainly didn't start with these touchscreen bedside hubs that just automatically stream your data to the cloud.
Oh, far from it. I mean, if you rewind the clock, patient monitoring was an entirely manual, completely isolated process.
Like counting beats on a wrist.
Exactly. Think about something as simple as taking a pulse. Before modern watches were even common, a clinician might count a patient's pulse by, you know, comparing it against their own heartbeat.
Wow, really?
Yeah, or by using a small sand glass. You had these really basic physical tools, like a glass thermometer under the tongue.
Oh, I remember those.
Right, or the classic sphygmomanometer.
The blood bacchometer.
A sphygmomanometer. It's that manual blood pressure cuff with a little rubber bulb you pump up.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, and the doctor requires a stethoscope in a very quiet room just to hear the blood flow.
Which means all that historical data was really just a snapshot, right?
Precisely, a single snapshot.
So a doctor gets one discrete measurement at one specific moment in time. And whatever happens, say, 5 minutes after they leave the room
is a complete mystery, yeah.
That's terrifying.
It was the crucial limitation of early medicine. The massive leap forward in the 20th century was the introduction of electrocardiograms, or ECGs, and those early automated blood pressure monitors.
Right.
Suddenly, clinicians could visualize the electrical activity of the heart continuously and without physically opening the chest to look at it.
Which I'm sure the patients appreciated.
Definitely. But that shift, you know, from a single snapshot to a continuous motion picture of human health, that laid the foundation for the entire digital era we're in now.
And today, according to the Bulmamed guide anyway, that continuous motion picture is built on 5 core metrics.
The big 5, yeah.
Now, I understand why we track heart rate, blood pressure, and temperature. That makes sense. But I've always been slightly confused by respiratory rate.
How so?
Well, if a monitor is already tracking my heart rate, right, and my heart pumps the blood that carries the oxygen, isn't my breathing just directly tied to my pulse?
Ah.
Like, why does it need a completely dedicated sensor?
You know, that is a very common misconception. While they are obviously related, your cardiovascular and respiratory systems can completely decouple during a medical crisis.
Wait, really? Decouple how?
Let's say a patient is developing sepsis, or maybe a severe metabolic acidosis.
Okay.
Their body desperately needs to blow off excess carbon dioxide and fast. So their respiratory rate will absolutely skyrocket. They will start taking these quick, shallow breaths
right,
long before their heart rate or blood pressure shows any sign of a catastrophic collapse.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So if you only track the heart, you completely miss the early warning sign of respiratory distress.
I see. Okay. That makes perfect sense. And then the 5th core metric is oxygen saturation, or SpO2, right? Which kind of became a household name a few years ago.
It certainly did.
But how is a little plastic clip on my finger actually measuring the oxygen inside my veins? And without drawing any blood.
It's pretty brilliant, actually. It relies on optical physics.
Optical?
Yeah, a pulse oximeter shines two different wavelengths of light through your finger. You got red light and infrared light.
Okay.
So oxygenated hemoglobin, which is the protein in your blood that's currently carrying the oxygen, that absorbs more infrared light and lets more of the red light pass through.
Oh, I see.
And deoxygenated hemoglobin does the exact opposite. So the sensor on the other side of your finger just measures the ratio of what makes it through the tissue.
That's incredible.
Right. And an algorithm instantly calculates your blood oxygen percentage based on that light. It is incredibly vital for managing chronic conditions like COPD or, you know, monitoring a patient under anesthesia.
You know, I like to think of these five metrics acting together as like a highly advanced car dashboard.
Yeah.
But for the human body.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like when you are driving down the highway, your dashboard gives you a real-time readout of your engine health, right? Engine temperature, oil pressure, battery charge.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you all that so you can pull over before the entire system breaks down and literally leaves you stranded on the side of the road.
What's fascinating here is that the true power of a modern vital signs monitor is completely dependent on that combination.
The combination of the five.
Exactly. I mean, a temperature reading alone, it just tells a clinician you are warm.
Right.
But if the software looks at that whole dashboard and sees a high temperature paired with a spike in heart rate, a specific alteration in respiratory rate, and a sudden drop in blood pressure.
That's a totally different story.
A completely comprehensive story. The monitor synthesizes those isolated data points to tell the clinician, listen, this patient isn't just running a fever. They are entering the early stages of septic shock.
So it spots the cascading failure before a human observer ever could.
Precisely.
But, you know, this is kind of where my dashboard analogy starts to fall apart a little bit.
Oh, why is that?
Well, you can put the exact same dashboard in a million identical sedans, and it works perfectly every time. But human bodies are not identical sedans.
That is very true.
And the environments where we actually administer healthcare are completely different, right? I mean, a standard monitor bolted to the wall of a pristine hospital room simply does not work for someone being airlifted off a mountain.
Right. Which brings us to the physical evolution of these devices. The industry really had to recognize that one size fits absolutely no one.
Mm-hmm.
The BOMED guide actually breaks this physical evolution down into four main categories.
What are they?
First, you have handheld monitors. These are compact, lightweight, mostly used for quick triage in a local clinic.
Makes sense.
Then you have the bedside monitors. These are those large, high-processing hubs you see in intensive care units. They're designed for really continuous, complex trend analysis.
Okay.
Moving away from the hospital entirely, you have wearables. These are wireless devices that allow patients to move freely around their own home while streaming vital data.
Oh, I love those.
And finally, you have transport monitors.
Now, those must be the ones built to survive, like a war zone.
They essentially are, yeah, they are ruggedized computers. They are engineered to absorb heavy impacts, resist fluid spills, and operate flawlessly on fluctuating battery power.
All while a patient is being bounced around in the back of a speeding ambulance.
Or a medevac helicopter, exactly.
See, that actually makes me wonder about a serious engineering conflict here.
What do you mean?
Well, making a device rugged enough to literally bounce around in a helicopter seems like it would heavily compromise the delicate precision needed for something like a premature baby in a neonatal unit.
Oh, absolutely.
So how do manufacturers balance the need for that extreme durability with the need for extreme sensitivity?
Well, they don't. They don't even try to build a single machine to do both.
Oh, really?
No, the solution is hyper-specialization. I mean, you would never hook up a rugged adult transport monitor to a premature baby in the NICU.
Right, that makes sense.
For neonates, the monitors use highly specialized, very gentle, non-invasive sensors because their skin is basically paper thin. But even more importantly, the software algorithms are completely different.
How so? Like, what's different about the software?
Well, a premature baby cries, wiggles, and moves constantly, right?
Yeah, of course.
Which creates massive motion artifacts, essentially static in the sensor data. Pediatric monitors utilize these advanced filtering algorithms specifically designed to separate the tiny, rapid heartbeat of a baby from the chaotic noise of their physical movement.
That is incredible.
It is. And conversely, a monitor designed for geriatric patients might focus its processing power on continuous cardiovascular tracking to detect microscopic arrhythmias associated with chronic heart disease.
So the technology basically wraps itself around the specific patient.
Exactly. And it adapts to the environment itself.
Right. The BummMTest source material actually highlights this really cool scenario where a rural healthcare worker is equipped with a highly portable, battery-operated vital signs machine.
Yes. I loved that example.
And they're literally hiking out to assess patients in incredibly remote areas. So we are not just shrinking the hospital tech. We are physically expanding access to clinical-grade care to populations who previously had, well, none.
It acts as a great equalizer in healthcare access. The geographical barriers to diagnostic precision are just dissolving.
Okay, so we have established these incredibly smart, specialized machines capturing highly tailored data. But capturing data is really only half the battle, isn't it?
Oh, less than half.
Right. Because if a monitor beeps in an empty hospital room and no doctor is around to hear it, that data is completely useless.
Exactly.
So where does all this information actually go once it leaves the sensor?
It flows into the data web. I actually like to think of a modern hospital as having a digital central nervous system.
A nervous system, okay.
Yeah, the monitors are no longer isolated islands. They act as the nerve endings. When a nurse takes your vitals today, they rarely reach for a clipboard to manually log the numbers.
Thank goodness for that.
Right. The monitor automatically transmits those metrics directly into your electronic health record, or EHR.
Which I imagine solves a massive problem with transcription errors.
A huge problem.
Because someone misreading messy handwriting or, you know, accidentally typing an 8 instead of a 9 could lead to a disastrous medication dosage.
Human error in data entry was historically a massive, massive vulnerability in patient safety. Automated EHR integration eliminates that entirely.
Wow.
But the nervous system does much more than just keep records. It feeds into remote alarm systems and advanced analytics. The BOM-IM guide provides two really specific case studies that illustrate this beautifully.
Okay, let's hear them.
In the first scenario, a patient is in the ICU recovering from surgery, and their oxygen saturation, their SpO2, begins to drop rapidly.
And the patient could be completely unconscious,
yeah,
totally unaware they're suffocating.
Precisely. Now, in the past, if the nurse was down the hall, that drop could go unnoticed for critical, life-threatening minutes. But on this integrated data web, the bedside monitor detects the drop instantly. And it doesn't just sound an alarm in the empty room.
What does it do?
It triggers a visual and audible alert at the central nursing station and simultaneously pushes a high priority notification directly to the attending physician's mobile device.
Oh, wow. So the care team intercepts the crisis before the patient suffers any brain damage.
Exactly.
That perfectly illustrates the reactive power of this network, right? Stopping an immediate emergency in its tracks.
Right.
But the second case study from the guide shows a completely different application.
It does. The second scenario shifts the focus to a home-based patient living with hypertension.
Okay.
They are using a remote wireless vital signs monitor right in their own living room. The device takes their blood pressure daily and securely uploads that data to their doctor's clinic.
Mm.
Over the course of 3 weeks, the system's background analytics detect a very subtle upward trend in the patient's resting blood pressure.
Not emergency yet, though.
No, nowhere near emergency levels yet. But the trajectory is pointing toward a crisis.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because the system flagged that subtle trend, the doctor calls the patient, adjusts their medication dosage over the phone, and the blood pressure normalizes.
Completely seamlessly.
The patient never felt sick, they never had to drive to the hospital, and they completely avoided a potentially fatal hypertensive stroke.
It's amazing.
It's like having a miniature doctor living in your pocket who constantly updates your medical file and, you know, texts your actual doctor before you even realize you were ill.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what you are describing is the absolute holy grail of modern medicine.
Really?
Yes. It is the systemic shift from reactive healthcare to preventative healthcare. I mean, for a century, our entire medical infrastructure has been built on fixing catastrophic failures after they occur.
Right. You have a heart attack, we perform surgery.
You go into shock, we resuscitate you.
Which is an incredibly expensive, totally inefficient, and physically devastating way to treat human beings.
It is totally unsustainable. But with continuous remote connectivity, we can manage chronic diseases like diabetes and hypertension proactively.
We identify the risk factors weeks in advance.
Yes. We keep patients out of the hospital, we free up ICU beds for actual trauma patients, and we fundamentally elevate the quality of life for the individual.
Okay, I love the vision. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But let me push back on the reality of implementing this.
Okay, go for it.
Because if we are talking about a future where millions of people have this mini doctor in their pocket, generating endless continuous streams of medical data, that creates some logistical nightmares, doesn't it?
It absolutely does.
Right, like we can't just slap a Wi-Fi sticker on a blood pressure cuff and call it a day.
No, the logistical hurdles are monumental. And to be fair, the guide is very transparent about these roadblocks.
What's the biggest one?
First, the cost barrier is immense. Outfitting a small independent clinic or a rural hospital with a fully integrated, state-of-the-art monitoring network is a staggering financial investment.
I can imagine.
Second, these machines require meticulous maintenance. They are not plug-and-play consumer electronics like a smartphone.
Right.
They demand strict, regular calibration to ensure clinical accuracy, intense disinfecting protocols between patients, and constant software firmware updates to protect the hospital network from cyberattacks.
Oh, wow, cybersecurity.
Yeah.
Because if a hacker gets into a wireless IV pump or a bedside monitor, that is a literal life or death security breach.
Exactly. Which is why the regulatory landscape is so incredibly intense. Manufacturers have to meet rigorous global standards.
Like the FCA.
Right. FDA approval in the United States, CE marking in Europe, and ISO 13485, which is basically the international gold standard for quality management in medical device manufacturing.
And earning those certifications takes years, right?
Years of incredibly expensive testing.
Okay, so beyond the cost and the hacking threats, what about the doctors themselves?
What do you mean?
Well, if these wearables are tracking us 24/7, sending constant updates to the cloud, aren't we risking massive data overload?
Oh, yeah.
Like, if a clinician's phone buzzes every single time a patient's heart rate spikes during a morning jog, won't they just get alert fatigue and start ignoring the warnings entirely?
Alert fatigue is arguably the most dangerous side effect of modern medical technology.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. If a machine cries wolf 100 times a day, the clinical staff will inevitably tune it out. They're only human.
Right.
And this is exactly where artificial intelligence and machine learning enter the equation. The purpose of integrating AI into these data webs is not to generate more alarms.
It's not.
No, the purpose is to violently filter the noise.
To separate the actual clinical signal from the overwhelming static.
Exactly. Imagine the AI as a highly experienced triage nurse looking at a mountain of raw data.
Okay.
The AI sees a heart rate spike, but it also correlates that data with the patient's smartwatch GPS showing they are running and notes their SpO2 remains
Oh, it
perfect.
knows they're just exercising.
Right, so the AI decides no alert needed. But if the AI detects a subtle pattern, perhaps a patient's respiratory rate has been gradually increasing by 2 breaths per minute every night at 2 a.m. for a week, while their core temperature elevates by a fraction of a degree.
That's a totally different context.
The AI recognizes the stealthy onset of an infection. It flags that specific hidden trend. It provides the doctor with a predictive insight, not just a raw data dump.
So it synthesizes the data so the human doctor can do what they actually went to medical school to do,
Yeah,
practice medicine.
precisely.
But wait, this brings up another massive problem.
Oh.
If the ultimate goal is to put these intelligent sensors, batteries, and microchips on millions of patients globally for continuous monitoring, aren't we creating an absolute e-waste apocalypse?
That is a very valid concern.
Because disposable medical plastics are already a huge environmental issue.
They are, and that has historically been a dark reality of the medical industry. The absolute necessity for sterility and precision naturally led to a culture of single-use disposable plastics.
Right, you don't want to reuse something on multiple patients if it isn't sterile.
Exactly. But the BAMED guide highlights a massive ongoing shift toward green technology in this space. Because the deployment scale is becoming so large, manufacturers are essentially being forced to innovate sustainable solutions.
Okay, so what does a sustainable vital signs monitor actually look like?
Well, it starts with the materials. We are seeing the introduction of recyclable and even biodegradable materials for the single-use components, like sensor adhesives.
Oh, that's great.
Internally, the monitors are being engineered with ultra-low-power microprocessors, so they consume a fraction of the energy while processing these heavy AI algorithms.
Nice.
And most importantly, there is a push toward modular, extended lifespan designs.
What does modular mean in this context?
Instead of throwing away an entire machine when one component fails, or when a software becomes obsolete, hospitals can just swap out individual modules. Or they can update the firmware over the air.
Oh, like updating your phone.
Exactly. It is a concerted effort to keep these massive, expensive devices out of landfills.
That makes a lot of sense. So what does this all mean?
Oh, yeah.
If we zoom out and look at the journey we have taken through this source material, we have watched vital signs monitors transform from isolated glass thermometers and manual cuffs into these interconnected, eco-friendly, AI-driven digital ecosystems.
It really is quite a leap.
It's massive. These machines have completely broken out of the intensive care unit. They are now actively protecting patients everywhere, filtering out the noise of our daily lives to find the hidden signals of disease.
Whether you are in the back of an ambulance or sleeping in your own bed.
Right. And the BoMyMed catalog represent a perfect snapshot of this evolution. The dashboard of life is no longer just telling us when the engine is smoking. It is predicting the breakdown before it ever happens.
It is a profound technological achievement,
truly.
Yeah. But, you know, as we consider the horizon of predictive AI and continuous wearable tracking, it kind of forces us to confront a deeply philosophical question.
Oh, I love a good philosophical curveball. Lay it on us.
Think about the logical conclusion of all this technology.
Okay.
If our daily consumer wearables eventually become as sophisticated and clinically accurate as the bedside monitors in an ICU.
Which they probably will.
Right. And if artificial intelligence can synthesize our data to accurately predict a major health crisis days or even weeks before we feel a single physical symptom.
Yeah.
Does the very definition of being sick change?
Oh, wow.
In the near future, will an illness begin when you physically feel unwell, or will it begin simply when you receive a digital notification on your wrist?
Wow. Are you sick when you start coughing, or are you sick when an algorithm tells you you're going to start coughing next Tuesday?
Exactly.
That is a wild paradigm shift to chew on. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the invisible high-tech world keeping us all ticking.
It was a pleasure.
Keep an eye on your dashboard, and as always, stay curious.